This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, Sharp Money, it's been quite a run today. Of course, John Smoltz, the Hall of Famer earlier. 24/7 sports is just, it's a must. You got to bookmark it. And 24/7 sports national football reporter Brandon Marcello joins us here. And I got to be honest, so you can find him at B Marcello, MarccelLo. And I just got this picture. Now, we used to have you on Mad Dog Sports Radio back in the day, and I didn't realize that you went through such a journey with the weight loss. My gosh, are you handsome? Look at this weight loss. So on the left, you can go over to Brandon Marcello on Twitter and see a picture of a handsome bald guy with a beard. And then all of a sudden you come out and you look like you're modeling. Can we walk through? First off, congratulations, because that's a wonderful, that's dedication that I don't even have. But can you walk through the journey? I hate to ask you, but it's awesome.
Yeah, back in March 2021, I got sick of being in pain and being very slow to get off the ground when I was playing with my toddler son. And I decided I was going to buy an elliptical and figure out a diet plan and exercise plan. And on April 1st, I had circled on my calendar on April Fool's Day, I was going to stop being a fool and change my life. So I just started getting on the elliptical and walking. I'd walk 5 to 6 days a week, 3 to 5 miles. And I started doing, this isn't a plug because they don't pay me or anything. I did Nutrisystem, ate a lot of raw vegetables. And over, you know, a year and a half, I lost about 150 pounds.
Wow.
I went from 324 pounds to, at my lowest, 173. And I've gained about 19 pounds back, but that's 19 pounds of mostly muscle. I've been doing a lot of strength training over the last 14 months, 13 months, and I've never felt better in my life, including in high school. And it's been the best thing I've ever done for myself.
You look incredible. And can I do something here? Can we bring in Dustin Sweetelson? I hope you don't mind, Dustin, but years ago, I've been working with Dustin for many years, and he had gotten to a point where he was, Brandon, he got up close to 400 pounds. And at that time we were doing a radio show. And I said, you're not coming back on the radio until you commit yourself to your health, because we were concerned about him. And Dustin, I was hoping maybe you could maybe get some inspiration here from Brandon, because you got to look at him, Dustin. How does that not inspire you?
Oh, I check out his Twitter all the time for inspiration. Cause I look, unlike Brandon, like I've done it twice where I've lost big chunks and then gained it back. And it's so hard to keep it off. Like, losing it was one thing, but to maintain it is, I think, five times as hard as losing it. Like, losing it is hard, but keeping it off is absolutely the hardest thing in the world.
It's really difficult. You know, every day is a battle. I don't know what it is. I've motivated myself with an app. Like, I've got to, like, I'm hitting goals every day and everything. So, like, even today here in an hour and a half, I'm going to the gym to go do my upper body stuff. And it's just, but it's like, I'm always trying to set new goals and reach them. And it's just, it's amazing how technology and app has helped keep me on that path, because every day is an absolute grind. You see the memes and everything. It's like, I lost all this weight, but you mean to tell me I have to keep eating healthy to keep looking this way? It's difficult. And you're exactly right. I think it's more difficult after you lose the weight.
Brandon, congratulations. Very, very impressive. I'm looking at some photos here on Twitter, and it's just incredible what you've been able to do in the journey. And I hope, whether it's Dustin or anybody else, I hope it serves as an inspiration that, you know, you can start from a difficult situation and really turn it around. So kudos to you. Just want to quickly get into some college football here, of course. Let's start down in the Southeastern Conference. Georgia looks like the prohibitive favorite, but let's go to the West Division. Is Alabama really going to take a step back this year, or is their demise been a little bit premature?
I think it's a little bit premature, but I go into this preseason still with LSU about an inch ahead of Alabama, just because LSU has their quarterback situation figured out. I think Jaden Daniels is incredibly underrated as a quarterback in the SEC. Tremendous playmaker, probably the best dual threat guy in the SEC West, and his ability to do things on his feet. Alabama still trying to figure out what to do at quarterback. They say it's a three-man battle there, but my understanding here early in preseason camp is that Jalen Milroe, who started a couple of games last year in place of Bryce Young when he was injured, has the edge over Tyler Buckner, who transferred in from Notre Dame. and Ty Simpson, who had been there last season. I'm just interested to see what this offense looks like from a pacing aspect with the new offensive coordinator, Tommy Rees, coming down from Notre Dame, and what that looks like with Jalen Milroe. Because Jalen Milroe, as much as criticism was thrown to him last year, I think he had some issues just trying to bounce back for some nagging injuries, the inexperience. And I think that he's a guy that's very dynamic on his feet, more so than Bryce Young even, and is someone that's going to be able to be, you know, utilized in a different way than what we've seen in the Alabama offense over the past like 3 years or so.
Brandon Marcello joining us, 24/7 Sports national football reporter at B Marcello. If you want to check out the picks, as Amal said, very inspiring, awesome stuff. Now, this is what you do for a living. You cover college football. What's happened and transpired over the last, 48 hours? I'd love to get your take. We might lose the Pac-12. I'm in California. That's a big deal, Brandon.
Yeah, it sucks. Just simply as put as that. That's why everybody keeps asking me, what do you think of this? I go, it sucks, because college football is great because of the traditions, but also the regional uniqueness to the sport. Conferences have identities based off of playing style and personnel and recruiting hotbeds in those areas. And now we're making this more and more of a national game with these conferences. And I think we're going to be taking some of the spirit away from college football in those instances. Having two LA schools in the Big Ten just seems strange anyway, and it's going to change the way we view West Coast schools. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with the four remaining Pac-12 schools. It certainly seems like those four schools, they're grouped in twos as far as taking divergent paths. I think Cal and Stanford more than likely will end up being independent. And I think Oregon State and Washington State, as it stands right now, will have a couple of choices, whether it's going to the Mountain West or maybe the AAC. But also keep in mind, the surviving members of the Pac-12 kind of hold the coins in the purse, so to speak, of what's left of the Pac-12, whether it's media rights, but also, do we pay the members that are still in the conference this year their full shares? They're leaving us, so we can penalize them potentially and keep some of their money to, one, go recruit new teams potentially, or go do our own thing and start something new. So Oregon State and Washington State have some options. I'm just not sure that we're going to see something transpire here as quickly as we saw last week. I think this is something that'll probably go through, maybe even potentially all the way through the end of this year.
It's interesting in terms of, you mentioned levying the fines against those schools that are departing, because you've got to try and grab some of this money if you're Oregon State and Washington State, at least from my perspective. Let's stay out west for a second. Caleb Williams, reigning Heisman Trophy winner. Are the Trojans, in your mind, the favorite and the best shot for the Pac-12 to get a team back into the college football playoff since Washington in, 2016, I think?
Yeah, absolutely. They are talented all across the board. The problem with them last year was that defense under Alex Grinch. They just wore down near the end of the year. Terrible missed assignments, missed tackles, just embarrassing performances in the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season. But if you look at Alex Grinch's history as a coordinator and building defenses, there's a huge jump to year two under him. And they've done a great job, obviously, in the transfer portal in year one, and then year two, filling some holes. Defensive tackle Bear Alexander coming in from Georgia, former five-star prospect, incredible pass rusher. Mason Cobb, an incredible linebacker, actually played against Caleb Williams in Bedlam when he was at Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, respectively. They have filled some nice holes there defensively. We know they're going to score points offensively, and they have restocked and reloaded there through the portal. I really like this team. And more importantly, the trenches for them, bigger and deeper than it was a year ago. And the Pac-12 champions the last 3 years have been the most physical teams in the trenches. Utah these last 2 years, and previously Oregon in that mix as well. I really like the makeup of this USC team to win the Pac-12. The problem, though, is that this might be the best the Pac-12 has been in over a decade since we saw those USC teams under Pete Carroll starting to trim down a little bit. I think that this Pac-12, because of the quarterback power we're seeing everywhere, but also because of the defenses getting better across the board, you got an Oregon State that might have the best offensive line in all of college football, guys, and a threat to maybe be a dark horse to win the Pac-12 this year. Washington has Michael Penix, who I think might be the second or third best quarterback in all of the country. And of course, Bo Nix at Oregon. And you can't discount Utah, the back-to-back Pac-12 champs. The Pac-12 is going to be hell to get through this year. And it's going to be very difficult to get a playoff team in there because, as we've seen, you got to be undefeated or have one loss, and that's it to get into the playoff picture. And it's going to be very difficult with this schedule.
Well, the beautiful, or maybe the sad irony, is what you just said, Brandon. We've been waiting for a decade for the Pac-12 not to be the butt of the joke. The Pac-12 is deep. The Pac-12 is legit this year, and there are problems up and down the schedule in conference, and the Pac-12 is going away. Like, you can't make it up. Like, the symbolism is insane. Like, USC is legit. Oregon. Let me ask you this. One, you said you don't have to do chess for another hour. Can we keep you for 10 more minutes? Is that cool?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Okay, because we've got questions. We got plenty. We got a minute left. You can see the countdown. USC is your is one at plus 190. Who's the second best team in the Pac-12? And we'll come back and continue.
It's a great question. I'm going to go with Washington. Quarterback, star power, superstar, and Kalen DeBoer, and what he does with that offense and his relationship with Michael Penix stretching back to their days back at Indiana when he was an offensive coordinator there. Potent, potent combination there, and they've got good pass rushers. I really like Washington.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do when we come back, Brandon. The four teams that we tackled today were Wisconsin, Texas Tech, Oregon, and Arkansas. Give you 3 minutes of homework. Wisconsin, Texas Tech, Oregon, and Arkansas, and we'll come back and discuss them with Brandon Marcello, doing a great job. 24/7 sports. Make sure you bookmark it for the college football season, and you can find Brandon and his journey at B Marcello on Twitter. We're back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSIN, and now's the time to become a VSIN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSIN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up today for $199. You'll receive both the guides plus full VSIN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or you can join for $19 for your first month and see if you like it. If so, VSIN.com/subscribe to sign up. VSIN.com/subscribe. Make sure you check that out. Okay. Lucky enough to have Brandon Marcello join us for a second segment here. 24/7 sports national football reporter at B Marcello on Twitter. And what's interesting, Amal Shaw, Patrick Maher, Dustin Sweetelson, and Brandon joining. We had four teams today: Wisconsin, Texas Tech, and Oregon, and then Arkansas. And during the break, we learned not only is Brandon set to talk about Arkansas, he lives 10 minutes from campus and went to Arkansas. So you're the perfect person to discuss. Sam Pittman, 7-6 last year, close losses, 16 wins the last two seasons. That's got to be, I'll let you start with it and run with it. That's got to be the best run since Petrino, no?
Yeah, it is. And they were ranked, I think, last year in the top 10, top 15 for the first time under since Petrino. And it was a little bit of a disappointment last year. They went in that bowl game needing a seventh win and had to hold off Kansas. And, you know, the fan base was kind of disappointed. The fan base at Arkansas, I mean, all fan bases are similar, but the fan base at Arkansas, as soon as they get a taste of any type of success, they think that, oh, next year we're going to win 10 or 11 games. And that just doesn't happen in Arkansas's history. But having said that, they returned some good pieces this year, led by obviously quarterback KJ Jefferson, who you could argue is probably a top two or top three quarterback in the SEC going into this year. Rocket Sanders at running back, who might be the best running back in all of the SEC. Some really good offensive linemen. But outside that, the rest of the roster really is like question marks. They did a good job in the transfer portal, getting like a top 15 class to help fill those holes. But listen, they don't have a game breaker receiver. They also lost Kendall Briles, an offensive coordinator, to TCU. And they brought in Dan Enos, who was previously the offensive coordinator at Arkansas back in the Brett Bielema era. And the offense is going to be a lot different, a lot more tight ends, and not as fast pace. They're running it more like an NFL offense. It's no more just running just to a piece of turf and throwing the ball and getting the ball rolling like with Kendall Briles. They're calling plays in the huddle, lining up, going under center at times. I'm interested to see how they transition to that. It's not going to be as explosive. They're not going to score as many points, I don't think, this upcoming year. One, because of the lack of receivers, but also this change in the offense. And the defense lost arguably the best linebacker in Arkansas history, and also another guy who was a like fifth or sixth year senior that was a leader at the linebacker spot, and they had to replace their defensive coordinator. In fact, they had to replace, I think, five assistant coaches. So this roster and this coaching staff had a lot of turnover, but you have your anchors at quarterback and running back that gives you some hope, some experience in big moments, but I don't see how this team necessarily improved roster-wise from last season.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Travis Williams takes over as the new defensive coordinator there in Fayetteville. I want to stay on the defensive side of the ball. I like the addition of Trajan Jeffcoat from Missouri. He's got a potential to be an all-league defender on the defensive line. But a player I'm curious about, Jaheim Singletary, five-star, four-star recruit, depending on where you look. Initially was committed to Ohio State, decommits from there, goes to Georgia, and now transfers after 1 year to Arkansas. Does the talent match some of the situations with him? Because it feels like, you know, Sam Pittman to me seems like a no-nonsense guy, but can he come in and really take advantage of the talent that he brings to the table?
Yeah, that's the one of the curious moves this offseason, because Arkansas, they were kind of purging those type of players that weren't really doing well in the locker room, and then they were bringing in new guys to fit that space, and I wonder how that'll work. I will say this, defensive coordinator Travis Williams, I've known him for a very long time in his previous spots at Auburn and also UCF. This guy is going to be aggressive with his defense. He's very creative with the way he brings pressure and disguising coverages. I'm very excited to see what he does with that defense. I think that defense, maybe not this year, but the next few years, they're going to be one of the more exciting ones to watch in the SEC, especially against some of these offenses that like to spread the ball around, throw it a little bit. He tends to really thrive in those type of situations as a play caller on defense. And he's a young guy and he's got crazy aspirations. And I think that they're going to they're going to be fun to watch at least this year defensively, if maybe not necessarily all productive. I think it's going to be one of those situations where they might have some games where they force four turnovers, and they might be some games where they've allowed 35 points and lose by double digits.
KJ Jefferson is way down there if I'm looking at the Heisman, but we were having the conversation a little bit earlier, Brandon. Is he the best quarterback in the SEC?
I think some people can make that argument because of going into the season. There's not a lot of star power returning, but I think at the end of the season, he's not going to be. And if you're talking about Heisman conversation at Arkansas, I always go back to Darren McFadden. If Darren McFadden couldn't win it and is a back-to-back second place finisher, then you're just not going to win a Heisman at Arkansas unless you go to the national championship or an SEC champion, I should say. But he's good. I think his numbers are going to take a step back this year. His production, because of this offense and the tweaks they're making, it's going to change. I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more, and they're not going to put the game so much on his shoulders after the snap as much as they're going to put more on his shoulders before the snap. And by that, I mean, one, calling the plays at the line of scrimmage with actual verbiage instead of looking at the sideline for signs, and also having to identify coverages and making checks. That's something he wasn't having to do previously in the Kendall Briles system.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this team. You mentioned Rocket Sanders. I love him, but I'm not as high on KJ Jefferson. I like what he can do in short yardage situations with his ability to be physical. When you look around, what is probably the biggest challenge for them on the offensive side of the ball from a consistency standpoint? Because Jefferson, some games he looks like he's the best quarterback in the league, and the other times you're like, how is this guy on an SEC roster?
Well, does he have the receivers? Because he's lost, you know, some big time guys, including Trey Knox, who transferred to South Carolina just within the SEC. You know, they brought in a couple new guys from the lower levels of college football, including, I think, the FCS, maybe even D2 levels. And one of those guys actually got to watch in a couple of spring practices in person was Isaac Tesla, who at the time, by the way, great name.
Yes.
But at the time, was getting rave reviews and was sneaking past guys, sneaking through coverages, really undercutting linebackers, doing some really good stuff in these practices. And he was someone that I kept thinking that's someone I need to watch. And people on that Arkansas staff were telling me the same. But until we see a game breaker out there, that's kind of what you were accustomed to seeing Kendall Briles' offense. He always had a big-time receiver that got that offense going and would get them out of some big holes and big ruts. I'm not seeing that game breaker on this Arkansas roster this season.
By the way, Hillsdale College, anybody know where that is? That's where Tesla transferred in from.
Okay, just 2 minutes left here, Brandon. We were talking Wisconsin. Amal and Dustin are very high on Fickell in Wisconsin. They hit the portal hard. You don't have to go too in-depth, but Mordecai looks like he's going to be the starter there. Do you see big things for Fickell at Wisconsin?
I do this year. They're my pick to maybe end up winning the Big Ten this year. I don't think it's going to happen because Ohio State and Michigan are just far above everybody else. But the reason why I say that is because I think that they might have the Big Ten player of the year on their roster. And that guy is running back Braylon Allen. I've been in love with his playing style the last 2 years. If he could stay healthy, he is breaking out this season. A guy that is just going to accustomed to running the ball. They're going to spread him out, get the ball to him in space in this passing game under Phil Longo. The new offensive coordinator came over from North Carolina after coaching Drake May. I really like Braylon Allen to put up some huge numbers this year out of that backfield and give Wisconsin a spark on offense that we haven't quite seen in quite some time.
Brandon, I think Braylon Allen's the best running back in college football.
I wouldn't argue with you right now. And I think this year people's eyes are going to open because they're going to see him more as a well-rounded guy. He's going to help them out quite a bit in the passing game, I think.
Okay. Go hit chess. 24/7 sports national football reporter, Brandon Marcello at B Marcello on Twitter. We're going to talk to you during the season, Brandon. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate that. Another good job by the big guy. He had a cool setup, almost like the setups are important because I got my setup here for VEASAN, but he's kind of got like the gamer, those chairs that the kids buy, the cool kids. You know what I'm talking about, guys? Like
I had one of
them that the cool kids have to have.
I got to tell you, there's one aspect to those chairs that's just absolutely underrated. They go so high that like you can just lock in and like lean back and it just stays with you. No neck pain, no back pain. Oh, it's tremendous. Those chairs, they are more comfortable than they look. I think they're awesome.
All right, there it is. Three up, three down. We've got plenty of baseball. Let me just check in on. We did have, I don't know, did you either of you play?
No.
The early game today with Washington and Philly. It's 3-3, bottom four. Did you play it, big guy?
No. I stayed away, but I do have two games I'm looking at for later.
Okay, we'll get into those as we continue. Also, the top 10 coming up. Sharp Money. It's VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, get the picks. They're easy to find. VSIN.com/subscribe. You can follow the host and guest here at the network. Also, the experts leaderboard makes it easy to figure out who to follow and who to fade. Make sure you check them out. Introductory offer right now. 1 month for $19. You like it? Stick around. You don't? You go. VSIN.com/subscribe. Make sure you check out the picks. Okay, we got you back here. Sharp Money, Amal Shaw, Patrick Maher, of course, Dustin Sweetelson with an all-world day booking guest. It's just us the rest of the way for the last half hour here. Got the top 10 coming up. I know you got a couple of baseball plays. We should talk just a little baseball as we resume because you got about 8 weeks to go. Playoff races the next couple of months. I was digging, 70% of the season down, boys. But I was digging through, and maybe you can catch me, but I think you could argue in the NL and AL, 10 of 15 teams still in contention. Like this is for baseball this year and what Manfred wanted. And Manfred, regardless of what happens this year in baseball, is an unmitigated disaster, an all-time bad commissioner that won't change. He was never set for the position, and he's gone on to trip over himself at every turn. However, the pitch clock is ingenious. Should have been earlier. Manfred stopped it. Now it's back. Okay. And the pitch clock has done wonders. For example, the Phillies and Nats today are playing a doubleheader. You can very justifiably get two in with the pitch clock the way it is. Before, it would have almost been an impossibility. But I've got 10 of 15 in each league. A couple of things that stand out, and you guys can jump in with this. One division's a wrap. That's Atlanta. I don't know if you two have anybody coming back in that division. They're 70-39. they're going to win their sixth straight division. I don't think there's a question, which is fascinating because that division has been tough. Okay. So everything else is open though. You've got the Giants who, you know, 8-10 their last 18, the Phillies who have been up and down in stretches, the Cubs and Reds tied for third wild card. The last I looked, maybe it's been updated, but the Cubs are 20. We're 26-36. Maybe we should start there. The Cubs, them all, were 26-36. They took two of three from the Braves, and they're 13-3 in their last 16. For a team that we kind of clowned a little bit for, you know, not necessarily selling and buying at the trade deadline, the Cubs are paying off.
There's no question about it. You mentioned it right now, 2.5 games back behind the Milwaukee Brewers, just two in the loss comp, continue to play well. And I think it was a prudent move. Now, I disagreed with it at the time in terms of keeping Cody Bellinger, but this team's got a legitimate shot to make a postseason push. You look at this Reds team's team 3-7 in their last 10, Milwaukee 4-6. They get a big win last night, but overall, it's definitely right there for the Chicago Cubs. And this is the closest race in the National League. You mentioned it. Right now, the Dodgers are anywhere between minus 800 to 1,000 to win their division. Braves, I saw yesterday, just happened to look, minus 20,000 to win the division. And in terms of Milwaukee, Cincinnati, and Chicago, you could make an argument on any one of the three teams to win this Central.
The Cubs, I totally agree. The Cubs, your Milwaukee Brewers, the Reds, a tailspin, Dustin Swedelson. They had lost six straight until last night, a 5-2 win over the Marlins. So 1-6 their last seven. They got swept at home over the weekend by the Nats. Not great.
No, I mean, it's really disappointing what the Reds and a team like the Diamondbacks did at the deadline, like not adding enough starting pitching when you have this window and this opportunity to begin this postseason push. And instead you just stay pat and you do what you've been doing, which when other teams are potentially going to play better, like the Cubs, when they're energized by not making a move at the deadline, that's just a dangerous game to play. This Cubs roster is a decent roster. Like, everything is good about it. There's nothing amazing about it, but there's a lot of good there, and that division just kind of stinks. No one's running away with it. So I don't think they're out of it yet. I'd like them to back off because I've got the Brewers at 40-1 to win the World Series. I've got the Reds at 5-1 to win the division. I need the Cubs at some point to hit some sort of skid here.
The back-to-earth category includes two teams. One, the Marlins. They're 5-17 since the All-Star break. Not terrific. To the Diamondbacks, yeah. A Major League Baseball worst since July 1st, 7-22. What's fascinating about the Diamondbacks is dummies like me, and I'll put myself first, peacocking because I picked them to go over their season win total, and they started off so well, boys, that they're probably still in the mix, but a 7-22 run is going to scare you.
They're one game over 500.
What's their season win total, or what was it?
70 something?
It was like
74.
I don't think it was that high. I think it was like 72.5. I'll get it for you.
They'll get there just simply based on the fact they've already got 57 wins in 113 games. But Dustin brought up a good point. I remember looking at this team a couple days ago, and I can't believe they were so close to 500. Now, just one game above 500, losers of 6 in a row, 2-8 in their last 10. And it just seems like the tailspin that you alluded to, Patrick, for Miami and Arizona was probably expected at some point in time in the season. But not only have they both been playing poorly, they've jumped off an absolute cliff here.
Dustin, I'm looking this up because I
want to know. 75.5, I think, is what I found.
Oh, it was more than I thought. Wow.
74.5 too. I mean, it's right around there.
So they've got to basically, they got to go about 18 and what, 31? They've got 49 games remaining.
Sounds right.
We shall see. So the Brewers, who the big guy just loved, and I believe present day loves, they started 18-8. They're 42-44 since. What's going on with your boys?
Well,
it's not necessarily a crazy good division.
Well, they were without Brandon Woodruff pretty much the entire season. I think he made one start, got hurt, and they just got him back this past week. But they have no offense. I mean, the Rowdy Tellez is on his way back on a rehab stint right now. But when you're relying on Rowdy Tellez to come back to the heart of your order, you know things aren't going right offensively. They found, like, young guys. They've mixed and matched throughout. But there's just no consistency on offense outside of Christian Yelich, which is why I know he's not going to win the award. Like, let me be very clear. Christian Yelich is not going to win the award. Ronald Acuna Jr. deserves the award. Saying it again, Ronald Acuna deserves the NL MVP. But I think you can make the case that Christian Yelich should be in the mix a little bit more, considering if you took him out of this Brewers lineup, they would be behind the Cardinals in the Central in last place.
I can appreciate what you're saying about Acuna, but I'll tell you another guy that should be in there. And really, if you take him off his team, they're in even worse shape. And that's Freddie Freeman with the Dodgers. This guy has been unbelievable. He's now tied with Acuna in terms of runs scored, where the difference between Acuna and Freddie Freeman is just in terms of stolen bases. But Freddie Freeman has been an absolute beast for this Dodgers team. Third of the National League in RBI with 80. He is just incredible. He's batting average. He's second in the league at 340. Behind Luis Arraez, who's been outstanding. To me, I don't think it should be as much of a slam dunk in favor of Ronald Acuna to win the MVP as it is right now.
Well, you can bet right now over at DraftKings. Acuna Jr. or the field, big guy? Acuna Jr. is minus 1,600. The field is 7-1.
Yeah, but
and
I
if
mean,
you just go straight to the market, Freddie Freeman, whom Amal just mentions, 8-1.
But the problem is when someone is historic, they're going to win the award. And right now, he's going to be the first 30-60 guy in the league hitting 339, driving in right now 67. He'll probably be around 85, 90, maybe even 100. He's at 99 runs already. Like, he's having a historic season. That's why he'll get it. But when we look back on this award or on this season for Acuna, are we going to start to talk about the pitch clock rules, the potential changes coming? Because if he goes 30-60 or 40-60, I think things will be different next year if they tweak it a little bit.
Well, that's why I don't want to give him as much credit for having a historic season. Can you imagine what some of these other guys would have been able to do when you can only throw over to first base twice?
No, I get that, Amal, but at the same time, he is number one in the league in steals. So, like, he's ahead of everyone else. The next guy behind him is Ruiz of Oakland, who's nine behind him. It's not like other guys are in the mix at 53. He's the only one in the 50s at the moment.
My argument is if you take Freddie Freeman off the Dodgers, I don't think they're sitting in first place. I think if you remove Ronald Acuna from the Braves, they may not have a 10-game lead, but they probably got a 5-game lead over their nearest competitor, 6 games. The Los Angeles Dodgers have literally been carried by Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. These two guys have been incredible. Those guys are probably going to end up finishing second and third in the MVP voting in the National League.
Conversation we had about 5 years ago has been decided. No arbitrator needed. If you're starting a team with Acuna Jr. or Soto, I'm sorry, Soto's having a nice year. Acuna Jr.'s on another planet. I think now Soto's still so young. What are they both? 25, 24?
I mean, you can place Ronald Acuna Jr. in any generation in the history of baseball, and he would be an elite baseball player. In fact, I think the further back you go with him, he'd look like an alien. He's so talented.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. I'm just curious now. 24 for Soto. Is Acuna Jr. the exact same age? I think he might be. Let's see. He might be 25, actually. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, give him credit for staying healthy because, you know, Dustin, you talk about historic seasons. The one that I kind of go back to, the guy that would have had the all-time year was Eric Davis in 87. 37 homers and 50 stolen bases in like 130 games, and then he got injured. But Acuna's, all I'm saying is Acuna's having a great year. I think the Braves are right where they are, even without Acuna on that roster. The Dodgers are chasing a wild card if Freddie Freeman's not in Los Angeles, in my opinion.
And the Brewers are getting demoted to AAA without Yelich.
Acuna Jr.'s numbers, just looking at them, are stupid. It's like just the numbers themselves. I agree with both your arguments, but wow. Okay, got a few plays in the top 10 next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You got the power ratings, you got the picks, you got the previews, you got predictions, and you can become a VSIN pro as well and get all access and a pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2023 college football and NFL betting guides. Both the college football guide and our NFL betting guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. The only way to get the guides and everything we offer is to become a VSIN Pro subscriber, and you can do that at vsin.com/subscribe. It's vsin.com/subscribe. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher as we welcome you back. It's been a busy show. If you missed anything, you can always go to vsin.com and archive all the shows over there. Just a couple of things before I know, Big Guy, you got a couple of plays. You got the top 10 coming up. Tim Anderson has been suspended for 6 games and Ramirez suspended for 3. So Instigator gets the 6, 3 for Ramirez. My assumption is they'll both appeal. Do you, either of you have anything on the suspension length for Anderson and Ramirez?
No, but I'm glad baseball did the right thing in suspending him for a longer amount of time because he was the instigator.
Big guy?
Don't suspend him. It's good for the game. Let him fight.
I don't disagree with that. It was met with, outside of Tim Anderson and his family, I think most people enjoyed that. Now,
I like fights in sports. I mean, outside of what happened with the Pacers and Pistons, like, I like fights in sports. As long as the fans aren't the ones in the fight, I'm for it.
Speaking of fighting, we've joked throughout the season about, you guys know who I'm about to say? We've joked about this human throughout the year losing his freaking mind many, many times. He's known to be low key, but this year he's become unhinged. And there's good reasons this guy has become unhinged. I'll keep going with clues. He is a guy that has a brother.
That narrows it
down. He hit a historic home run in an historic rivalry.
Jose Canseco?
Aaron Boone lost his mind again last night.
Yeah.
Aaron Boone, he's now doing shtick. He's in the Dustin Sweetelson school of managing. He said, you know what? Our team stinks. So here's what I'm going to do. I can't outmanage you. We're not going to make the postseason, but I can outshtick you. And Aaron Boone, from everybody tells me he's like the most low-key, cool, you'd want to have a beer with guy. From the start of the season, he's just decided, I don't know if he's comfortable in the role now. He's been there for a while, but he's feeling himself. And last night, he went out and tried to embarrass the ump, just doing Aaron Boone shtick.
Well, look, he's going to get fired. Laz Diaz made a couple of calls that were egregious if you're watching that White Sox game against the Yankees in Chicago. And some of these umpires, though, I don't like how quickly they eject managers or players for arguing balls and strikes. In some of these calls, Patrick, as you know, we've talked about this at length, they are so bad. I mean, it's almost like there's a borderline vendetta against certain players.
Yeah, it can get personal. And these umpires, as you mentioned, and the managers, they have history together. But, you know, Billy Martin back in the day, you know, many managers were known. Sparky Anderson would go off on the manager. Aaron Boone, big guy, all of a sudden being that dude.
Look, I think Aaron Boone's looking at what's happening this year and nothing is changing no matter what he does. So he's probably saying, everyone says I'm not doing things right. Well, let me do something different here. And I do think it's for show. I think it's like, look, I'm trying every possible thing and nothing is changing. The reality is, Aaron Boone couldn't do anything with this roster because you got 3 different things happening at once. You have a rebuild with a bunch of young kids. You have a bunch of bad contracts that you're just sitting on and refusing to pay off. And then you have a couple really good players on the team. It is a weird mix of 3 different directions at once. And Brian Cashman somehow always comes out smelling like roses.
It's so true. I've never seen a GM stay in place, especially an organization for this long, like the Yankees.
It's either shtick or he's getting a divorce. That's it. It's life bringing itself to work or it's shtick, because there's no way you go from a mild mannered dude to all of a sudden just losing your mind in your mid 40s or 50s or whatever he is. Like that is such a temperament shift that it just doesn't make any sense. So I agree. I think it's purposeful.
He knows he's getting fired.
Right? I don't know if he's getting fired.
Oh, I don't know if he's getting fired.
I would take that wager all day. Aaron Boone will not be back.
He and Cashman are like best friends, and Cashman is sticking around. So maybe you're right. Maybe Boone, he does get
Boone,
fired. I don't
Boone
know.
Boone didn't assemble the roster. This organization's also been very clear that all decisions are made by the analytics department upstairs. So he's not making the decisions on the lineup or anything. He's not the one who decided Billy McKinney and Jake Bowers should be on a major league roster in 2023 for a team that thought they were going to the postseason. This team is disgusting. I hate Yankee fans. Do you understand? I grew up as a Mets fan. I actually was an Orioles fan until I was 12. Might jump back on that bandwagon now. I was tortured my entire childhood by Yankee fans in the 90s. I was 11 in 96. They went on this run. They became this dynasty. I should not feel bad for Yankee fans. I look at what they're putting out there right now. When you sign up to be a Yankee fan, that is not the quality of ball club you sign up to back. This is a disgrace to the Pinstripes.
I like the way you got saucy at the end. This is a disgrace. Well, we are doing sports talk radio, aren't we?
Well, that
this
was
is a disgrace.
Look, I'll take you under the curtain, which is in my brain right now. The coffee that I had was not a Trenta today. It was only a Venti.
Hey,
and the Venti only gets me to 251.
I know. I got you. Amal must have had a thimble size then.
Hey, no, he actually took a melatonin.
Amal might know this because there is something. I lived in New York for a long time. Here is the typical Yankee fan. Crooked hat, open jersey, tank top underneath, stain optional.
Depends on which train you're getting on with the stain.
Gold necklace ordered out of the back of the Rolling Stone. That turns colors, or source magazine. They didn't buy it from a legit jeweler, and absolute unparalleled arrogance. Yankee fan, tilted cap, WB under the open jersey with the fake gold chain. Goomba.
And they talk about how guys have to earn their pinstripes.
I got to tell you, that might be one of the best summations of any sports fan of any team I've ever heard described. That is so accurate. That is so. And the best part is when you're sitting out there, whether it's in the bleachers or you're sitting down, whether it's the first base or third base line, any guy makes a play. He's like, are you kidding me? There's 20 guys in Staten Island that can do it better than this guy.
Yeah. I mean,
it's unbelievable. You're so right about that.
And Dustin just said, there is something amongst Yankee fans, not players. Let me just remind you, I'm talking about the fans that believe fans also need to earn the pinstripes, which is a wild stretch if you think about it, because you're losers. Okay, we only got 2 minutes left. Let's get to the top 10. We're just getting to two. Yeah. I like this week's list. It's Dustin's top 10 casual sit down chain restaurants. Olive Garden and Cracker Barrel. We're two crackers out the gate. What do you got for number eight?
Number eight, I just think is a criminally underrated chain restaurant, Texas Roadhouse. Just like when you think of chains and getting a steak, you never know if you're going to get anything that's decent quality. And overall, everything I've ever eaten at Texas Roadhouse has been well-cooked, well-prepared, high-quality food. The only issue for it not being higher is I do think the menu is limited in what I would order there. But if you're going for steak, baked potato, and a beer, which might be my death row meal, Texas Roadhouse is really tough to beat.
I have an admission that I'm embarrassed by.
Never had it.
Why? Why is that? That is a hole in my game.
I don't think they're everywhere, and I don't think people realize how good they are. Like, I'll tell you right now, Longhorn Steakhouse is not on the list. Texas Roadhouse is better than Longhorn, although I do like Longhorn. The only thing I'd knock off Texas Roadhouse as well is that everyone eats peanuts when they go there. They just throw them on the floor, and I hate that vibe.
Oh, I thought that was part of the panache. No. Like, that's what people like about it.
No, I think people do. I just don't.
fair enough.
Someone's got to clean that up, like, at the end of the day.
Your list, bro. Number seven may be low because I freaking love number seven.
Well, number seven, you would think with a menu so big at the Cheesecake Factory that they wouldn't do anything on it well. But I have to say across the board, they do a lot of the different styles of food from different ethnicities pretty well. Like, it's really solid food. By the way, had the cheesecake only one time when I went there, and it was absolutely perfection, as you would expect with the name Cheesecake Factory. The only issue for it being seven is the menu's too big. I'm overwhelmed when I go, and I don't know what to order. I always panic order at the last minute. Then I regret what I got, and then the next time I order something else. So they keep me coming back because of that, but I always panic order. I'm never confident what I'm asking for.
You know how you get good service at a Cheesecake Factory? Open Yankee jersey, tank top underneath, fake gold necklace, and a tilted cap. Can't lose. Three great guests, John Smoltz, Ross Jackson, and Brandon Marchella. Boys, we'll see you tomorrow on Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.